This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. A group of scientists, ethicists and policy experts recently said that it is essential that the genetic modification of human embryos is allowed. Genetically modifying an embryo involves the editing of the genetic code of early stage embryos, which the group is of tremendous value to research. I mean, I think we've discussed in the past the three-parent baby, and that was pretty much a success. And Dr. Arif Anwar, our resident geneticist in the studio with us, to find out whether or not genetically modified embryos are indeed important. Welcome,
Meera.
Dr. Arif.
Yes.
How are
good
you?
Good to be back again.
I love the topic.
Yeah. Oh, it's a very interesting topic.
It is. And, and you know, after the reading, I would have, you know, without doing some research, I would have thought, you know, I would have been against it.
Yeah.
But after I read, I can see the benefits of it. But where do you draw the line, really? You
know? Yeah.
What was
Let
your
me
take
explain,
on
Well, I have very strong views on this ethically. And I was thinking about this topic on the way, not on the way here, driving, but on the way flying back to Malaysia last night. And, you know, within any community, and I'm going to get very unpopular maybe by saying some of these things, but I don't care. within any community, whether it's doctors or lawyers or your hairdresser, I mean, there are good people, there are bad people, there are people with certain views, at the left wing of views or more extreme views or in views in the middle. And the medical community or the scientific community, and I belong to the scientific community, there are people who are good people, there are people who are very nice people, there are people who are very good at what they do, and there's others who are not as good as they should be. I think for on the ethical side, and this committee is the Hingston Committee, which is a group of influential scientists, in inverted commas, who've said it should be something that should be done, should be allowed, embryo.
In the UK.
In the UK. Mm-hmm. Now, let me go and explain a little bit about what they mean by this. Because automatically, the gut instinct of most people would be, oh, God, embryos, do we want to really mess with embryos? And let's talk a little bit about some background science. Genetic diseases are caused by usually caused by some sort of change in the DNA that is different to what it's supposed to be, a mutation. Mm-hmm. And that mutation can be a complicated mutation or it can be a single change, a single letter different in the DNA, which can cause a disease. Now, there are two types of possible ways to fix that. To fix it, I mean fix in the real sense of the word. It's usually very difficult to fix genetic diseases. Normally one treats it or manages it somehow. Very hard to cure a genetic disease. There are two theoretical ways to cure a genetic disease. And it's very important to differentiate the two. One is called a somatic cell, which is a cell, for example, if a person who is an adult, you know, has a disease, like for example cystic fibrosis, which is a pretty common single gene disorder caused by a defect in a single gene. If you try and fix that, it's a somatic change, as in, we've discussed this before, I think, in a few months ago, whereby you can use a virus vector. I think I was with George when we talked about this.
Yes.
Where you use a virus to get a cell, you know, change, correct the mistake in the DNA. It's called a somatic change because it's not inherited, because if that person then goes and has a child, whether they're male or female, there is a probability that their child may still have cystic fibrosis, even though they were fixed of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an inheritable fix, which means it makes scientists feel and medical ethics professionals feel comfortable, as in, well, if we screw up, it's just that person and it can't be inherited. So ethically, it's accepted. It's routinely allowed in the vast majority of countries and jurisdictions. What is not allowed in most countries is messing around with embryos. There is a big difference with messing around with embryos because if you were to really cure someone of a disease permanently, if you were an adult and you have a genetic disease, you'd have to fix and change every single cell in the human. Now, we have plus or minus a little bit, you know, 10 trillion cells. How do you change to make sure every single cell gets corrected? It's very difficult to do that. It's far easier to do it at an embryo stage where the human has just started its life. You know, it could be 4 cells, 8 cells. it's very easy to then just change a few cells and then put that embryo back in, implant the embryo back in a woman, and then she carries on with the pregnancy. Now, ethically, the reason why a lot of people have a problem with that is because that change is permanent. That change is then
inherited,
carried out in the entire organism, that human. Mm-hmm. So every cell becomes corrected, in inverted commas. And then that person, whether they're male or female, if and when they go on to have children, it will be an inherited change, which will be maintained in the next generation. So from the sounds of it, it sounds extremely powerful, because you can literally eradicate a genetic condition from an entire family, an entire line of that family. It can disappear if you fix it way back early at the embryo stage. But that's also why people have a problem with it. So you see what I mean? There's a fundamental difference. Now, that's the science of it. I want to talk about the ethics. I think that's a really important point. Well, one more thing on the science. The technology, very briefly, it's boring to talk about this. The science now exists to actually edit and correct the change.
What do you mean?
It's called genome editing.
Yeah.
There's several methods. There's a method called CRISPR. There's TALEN. We have a method we use actually in Syngenics, which is what I won't talk about. But it's basically like, you know, if you can imagine, and you have to imagine, well, it depends how old you are now. I'm trying to use an analogy that people would relate to. I remember doing this as a kid, you know, when you have a cassette, you know.
Oh, yes.
Showing my age.
During your time.
Yeah,
my
age. When you have a cassette and it breaks somewhere, or there's a mistake in it somewhere, you cut it out and join it back together or put the right thing in. That's basically what genome editing is. You find where it's wrong, you cut it out, and you put back the right, you scissor it out and you put back the right bit of sound. Digitally. You could do that as well, right? In a soundtrack, you could take out the little bit of the tune that's gone wrong and put back the right code for the rest of the song. So that's what genome editing is correcting the bit that's wrong with a pair of scissors and putting in the right bit of music. But in this case, the right sequence in terms of the DNA. So it's an incredibly powerful technique. Mm-hmm. And this is not science fiction. These are published techniques which have been validated. They've been used in plants. They've been used in animals, and they work to varying extents. It hasn't been perfected, but it works.
What do you use it for?
We use it for plants. We don't mess with
humans
or embryos, absolutely not. We use it for plants. It's called genome editing. And we have a sister company called Heliogenics, which is a plant genetics company. And we do genome editing for plants and introduce traits into plants to make them resistant to whatever, you know, insects or pests or fungal infection or whatever,
GM.
Increase their yield.
GM food.
Yeah, it's a germ. Well, it's not GM actually. It isn't GM. But I won't go into that today. So, I think, you know, it's a tremendously powerful technology. It has the potential to eradicate a genetic condition within a family. Now, before we get into the ethics, and I have very powerful, strong, not powerful, sorry, wrong words. My words are worth less than a grain of sand. Not powerful. But I have strong views on this, which is that when it comes to this kind of thing, the people saying they don't want it or they think it's ethically wrong, many times, and I don't want to cast, you know, wide stereotypes, or not, you know, or kind of generalize too much. But globally, this is global numbers, and in Malaysia maybe it's higher than this, 7% of people, right? 1 in 15 of the population in Malaysia has a serious genetic condition, right? And many times you don't see these people because culturally in Asia, it's something that's hidden away, right? When you talk to somebody, you might not even know that their child has a problem, right? Or their brother has a problem or their sister has a problem. They never talk about it. You never see people in the Middle East or in Asia who are handicapped it's very rare, right? When was the last time you saw somebody who was mentally handicapped in a mall in Malaysia, in KL? Mira?
Long time ago.
Yeah, it's very rare. If you're in Europe or the US, it's far more acceptable socially, right? And people, it's accepted. You accept that person. I'm not saying that people don't accept that person in their family. It's just more hidden away. But the reality is, for these for the vast majority of these people, and I can relate to this in many ways. If you have a child who has a genetic condition, which is a serious, I'm not talking about, you know, in the article, it made me a little bit angry in the article in the BBC because it said something like, well, if you want to cure your child of cystic fibrosis or risk of developing cancer, I think that's really where I draw the line. Mm-hmm. Risk of developing cancer is a whole different, I mean, of course cancer is life-threatening, but it's a risk of developing cancer, which we all have. But cystic fibrosis or a musculoskeletal condition or a severe mental disability or a physical disability or something that could make the child have a very short life expectancy. Or I have a friend who lives, I won't of course name her, who's a very old friend of mine from university, and she married someone of a completely different ethnicity. Right, and they had a child, and by the time the child was 8 or 9, the child was intellectually completely normal, but by the time the child was 8 or 9, he had a genetic condition which meant that his bones were incredibly brittle, and now he can no longer walk or move around or even talk easily. So that's a debilitating condition. You know, we're not talking about being a bit taller or having softer skin or something trivial. This is a serious thing. And you ask those parents, right? You want to if you could, I mean, I know parents who would give anything to find a way for that condition to go away. And I know parents in Malaysia who spend enormous amounts of money way beyond their normal expenditure, you know, sell their house to find some treatment for their child. So I think before, and I'm going to be a little bit controversial and harsh here, sometimes, you know, scientists and doctors can be pompous and say, well, ethically, it's not right. Well, hold on a second, you know, let's draw the line. Let's think about it. And let's think about it in terms of putting yourself in the shoes of 7% of families who have someone in their family who has a serious genetic, debilitating, life-threatening condition.
But this can also go all wrong. While you're trying to genetically edit, things can go terribly wrong. We'll come back and continue this discussion. If you have a question for Dr. Arif Anwar, tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Arif Anwar, resident geneticist in the house, discussing whether or not genetically modified embryos are important. Mm-hmm. There was an article in the BBC whereby they were talking about genetically editing genes at the embryo stage, hopefully trying to better understand how some women have miscarriages and for a whole gamut of reasons. Okay. But of course, this genetic editing is not allowed all over the world, would you say?
Well, in the US, it's genome editing of embryos is not allowed in the US, for example. I don't know about everywhere else in the world, but it's illegal in the US.
Okay.
Now, the US, I'm going to the US next week, so I want to avoid getting stuck in immigration or anything. But, you know, the US tends to be pretty right wing when it comes to these things. You know, there are lots of things that are legal in Malaysia, legal in the UK, legal in Europe, legal in Australia that are illegal in the US when it comes to medical research, I'm talking about. The analogy I was thinking of is, for example, like doing, I forget which cult it is or which religious group it is, but it's in the US where they don't allow blood transfusions. I think the Mormons.
The Jehovah Witness.
Yeah, something, yes. Mm-hmm. And there are certain sects and groups around the world that don't allow transplants, you know, organ transplants. We are at this, and I think it's easy to forget where we are as humans in terms of our development as a species. For the very first time, you know, we're at a point where we are, in terms of development of technology, all technologies, whether it's IT or bioscience or whatever, you know, we're at the exponential stage where everything is ridiculously fast in terms of development, and things are changing very, very quickly.
Even on a gene level?
At every level, things are changing very, very fast. This will happen again and again in the next year, the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, this century. We're going to come up against ethical dilemmas which are difficult, not easy. I'm not saying this is easy by any means, but which have to be regulated, which have to be controlled, which have to be overcome. But in my view, in my personal view, they have to be leveraged. You know, we cannot just, it's wrong, it's ethically. I was talking to a wonderful person I know in the medical community, and he said it's ethical not to.
Exactly.
Is it
this?
Yeah. It's ethical. It's not about ethical to do it. It's ethical not to do it. If you can save an entire family, it's ethical not to do it.
So what are the risks? You start now, messing and editing with genes at an
risks,
embryo level.
Okay. The before we talk about risk, I think it's about regulations. You know, the first thing is, for example, if we look at transplant, organ transplants, mm-hmm. right? Now, is it if you wanted a heart transplant? Because there are strict rules in terms of heart transplants all over the world, right? If you want a heart transplant because you have a serious heart condition, you may die because you've got advanced plaque atherosclerosis mm-hmm. in your heart, then it's likely that you will get a heart transplant. If you want a heart transplant because you want to run faster or you want to have longer stamina, right, you're not going to get it. It isn't going to happen. It would be unethical to give somebody a heart transplant who just needs it to be able to run a bit faster, right, or swim a bit longer. It's unethical. It isn't allowed. You'll never get a heart. And similarly, for things like embryo genome editing and for all genetic technologies, and in fact for anything which is high technology, it is important to set in place regulations and rules that make sense. And I think I'd like to think that we live in a civilized society across the world, I'm talking about now, where rules can be put in place, like they have for simple things like heart transplants, which can be extended to things as complicated, perhaps, as embryo genome editing, right? One, my personal view, you know, it should not be used, absolutely not used, should it be illegal for doing things that are not life-threatening, for correcting things related to non-life-threatening diseases. But if it's something which is a life-threatening condition or a seriously debilitating condition, then as long as the technology has been perfected, and it has not, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Exactly. So, you know, it'll be naive of us to think that research is harmless. I'm sure there are repercussions of that.
The technology is very close. I mean, the technology is working. As I said, it's not science fiction. Technology is working. It's just a matter of time before it's used more routinely. And it will be.
Cheryl Said is asking a question for you, Dr. Arif. Can we edit gene and make them smarter, make people smarter?
No.
Why not?
No, as in ethically, it's wrong to do that, I think. My moral judgment.
And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
To use it for the right reasons.
To use it for the right reasons. Yeah. No, I think that's wrong.
Especially for genetic.
I think anyone sensible in any legal, medical, government authority would say, no, that is wrong to do.
Okay. China has actually done some research recently and at the Sun Yat-sen University, and mm-hmm. it showed that errors in the DNA that led to a blood disorder could be corrected in early-stage embryos.
Yes.
But when they announced it, the group, of course, came under fire. Mm-hmm. So what did you think of that?
Well, I know that particular university. I know Sun Yat-sen. We've done research with them. We've done a couple of projects with them on a cancer project recently. They're a credible group. Sun Yat-sen is a well-renowned university mm-hmm. With very high-quality researchers and scientists. I think with anything, and you know, let's talk about transplants as an analogy that we all know very well. You know, in certain countries in Africa, in certain countries in India, in India, for example, people get kidnapped and they have their kidneys cut out and transplanted without their knowledge.
Prisoners in China.
Right? Prisoners in China. Mm-hmm. You know, that happens. It happens in Thailand. I mean, these things happen. They're illegal. They're wrong. And I don't like saying this, but I think there will be misuse of this technology.
For sure. There will be abuse. Then how
there is
do
misuse.
You... Yeah.
You know, if you think about the internet or mobile phones, there is misuse and there's also enormous good use of the internet. So it's all about moral judgment and ethics and rules and following regulations and which side of the line you fall on. You know, do you stick to the rules or do you break the law? You know? And
what's the worst thing that can happen? As I said, it can go all wrong as well. This whole idea of
what is
gene,
the worst thing that
gene editing, yeah.
I don't want to say that on air. look, Mira, I think it's an incredibly fallible technology. And I stand by my original position, which is it is ethical not to use it. And any family, I wouldn't say, sorry, I don't want to generalize. The vast majority of families, you know, I would be very interested to hear from someone who may have a child or a family member who has a debilitating genetic disease where they would not consider it. I'd be very surprised if there is someone like that. I would guess that the vast majority of people would say, yes, please, can you try and fix it?
But under what circumstance would you fix? I mean, what are the criteria?
It's already happening, Mira. It's already, you know, it's already happening to an extent in a workaround way, not genome editing. But for example, let me give an example, which is done in almost all over the world today, and people don't realize it perhaps, but it is happening everywhere, is the use of IVF. To screen away and not implant embryos that have genetic problems. That's a technique that's used almost all over the world. It's not genome editing, but it's embryo selection.
You know, we had that discussion about the three-parent baby. Mm-hmm. Is that considered gene editing?
No, it's not gene editing. You're not editing, you're not changing the DNA.
What's the difference between the three-parent baby and genome editing?
The three-parent baby basically is that you have the male chromosomes coming from the father, the female chromosomes coming from the mother, the egg. But the reason why it's three is we have a third bit of DNA, which is the mitochondrial DNA. And that comes from a third person if the mother has a problem with her mitochondrial DNA. Now, there are many conditions that are caused by mitochondrial defects, this little thing that sits inside our cell that's involved in energy production. So that's the three, but there's no editing going on. There's a naturally existing bits of DNA in three different people that are mixed together to create.
So what are you doing during gene editing?
The
female chromosome, mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Okay, it is not at the male or female chromosome stage. It's at the embryo stage. The male and female chromosome.
After fertilization.
After fertilization, mm-hmm. The embryo is already formed.
Okay.
You have the very beginning of a new human being. And it can be done at... It's done at a very early stage because you want to make sure all the cells have that change, that correction. So, you know, when the embryo is at four cells, eight cells, sometimes a bit more, and then you're literally going in with a metaphorical scissor and cutting out the bit that's wrong and putting in the right bit.
But how would you know this embryo has inherited the faulty gene?
Aha.
So then what are you fixing?
There is a technique. In fact, we do this in Cygenics. It's called PGS, which is pre-implantation genetic screening. It is possible. So you have an eight-cell embryo. Mm-hmm. You take a single cell from that embryo. We can then sequence the DNA of that single cell and tell you the sequence of the DNA and tell you which one, where the error is and which embryo has the error.
Just from one cell?
Mm-hmm. It's possible right now.
Wow.
Yeah, we do it routinely in our lab in KL.
And if there is a faulty, faulty cell, am I saying that right?
Faulty cell in one of the embryos.
Okay.
So usually when a woman is going through IVF, mm-hmm. usually what the IVF specialist will do, and there are many good, in fact, I would say there are many, all the ones I know in Malaysia are world-class IVF specialists. I mean, these people are the top of their profession. They know what they're doing. So the ones I met, I think I met most of them already. So they're world-class. They know their stuff. They're doing it properly. with PGS, it usually what happens is an IVF specialist, an IVF doctor, let's call him that. They don't like being called that, but let's call them that just to. They will, it normally during a cycle, there'll be multiple embryos, 6 to 8 embryos, and you choose the best one or two to put back into, to implant. So there is this technique called PGS, which we do, which allows you to take a single cell from each embryo, test its DNA, and tell you which one is not normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it takes 24 hours to do that.
Right. And then you implant, or you implant
the IVF doctor.
The best, implants. Yes.
We just do the genetic test.
Okay. So at that stage is what you're saying, it can be fixed.
So this is not embryo gene editing. We're not doing any genome editing. It's just selection.
Yeah.
But my point is, it's already being done de facto around in a way around way. The way that these scientists, this Hingston group in the UK is proposing is, okay, in the PGS technique, we don't correct any errors. It's not possible to do that. But what they're saying is take the embryo, find out what the error is, and then correct it and snip it out and correct it. And that way, that child will then grow up free of that mutation, and every single cell in that child will be free of that disease, that mutation. And then if that child goes on to have children, male or female, whether the child is male or female, doesn't matter. And if he or she marries somebody who is normal, inverted commas, they will have a normal child free of that disease, and that disease is gone forever from their family line. And this is something that which is very important and for people who don't know anyone with a genetic condition or have anyone in their family with a genetic condition. Unfortunately, these conditions are pervasive within a family. There is a long history, unfortunately, you know, the aunt and the uncle and the brother and the sister, you know, and the grandfather, they all had it. So by doing embryo genome editing, that's it.
But we have all inherited some form of genetic condition.
Well, yes, true. We all have.
So then where do you draw the line?
I'm not talking about
the risk.
What am I
fixing? Yeah. I have the genetic genes, diabetes in my gene. Then
this is
what?
Not what we're talking. See, this is where I draw the line, Mira. We're not talking about diabetes or being obese or having a certain risk of developing a certain cancer or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. And I stress the word I with a big capital I, is where I draw the line is debilitating, life-threatening, inherited conditions from a birth point of view.
That's your opinion.
Well, no, it's not my opinion. Well, it is my opinion, but if you look it up, you Google it, there are 4,000 known serious inherited genetic conditions, right? I'm not talking about the risk of getting fat or being smarter. And I go back to the ethics of it. I think it's pompous and a bit very unfair to say, no, it's not right to do it. When you don't live in a family where your child has a life expectancy of 20 years, or your child cannot walk, or your child has no mental faculties in terms of anything basic, you know, you tell that to that family.
Leave that aside. I still think, you know, we have a obesity, it's a pandemic, it's an epidemic, whatever you want to call it, you know. Diabetes is causes a whole lot of problems later on in life.
It does.
Well, why can't you fix that?
Well, it's far more difficult because things like obesity and diabetes are not caused by a single gene disorder. In fact, the fundamental cause of obesity or diabetes from a genetic perspective is not actually known. There are maybe hundreds of genes and thousands of potential mutations involved. And some people who are obese have nothing to do with their genetics. They just like to eat more food.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who are obese have a genetic disposition to be more obese. It's not fair to say that. So
what about autism?
How do you do that?
What about autism?
Autism? Unfortunately, autism is also a highly complex disorder. It's not a single gene. There's no magic bullet, you know.
So it has to be a single gene.
There are hundreds of genes maybe that are involved in autism. And there are many, many potentially environmental factors. We've discussed that in the past. You know, it could be diet. It could be exposure to toxicity. It could be exposure to various chemicals. It could be your immune system. It's not simple. That will not be a great candidate for I don't want to put down hopes on anyone who's listening, but autism or obesity or certain types of cancer or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's are not good candidates for embryo genome editing because it's too damn complicated, and none of us know. I certainly don't. The global community does not know all the answers or where all the mutations are. And many of them are lifestyle diseases. That's why they're called lifestyle diseases. Mm-hmm. You know, the vast majority of people, unfortunately, I don't want to sound rude, who are obese or have type 2 diabetes can rectify it by changing their diet and their lifestyle. It's nothing to do with genome editing. Cystic fibrosis or those 4,000 genetic conditions I stated, which you Google that and you find it, nothing to do with lifestyle. It's something, unfortunately, you inherit. It could be a protein that's involved in your development of neurons in your brain, right, which affects your brain development. It could be a protein that's involved in forming the membranes between your neurons, and then that affects everything. It could be a protein that's involved in making your bones strong. And if that doesn't work properly, it just falls apart and becomes brittle. So these are not trivial conditions, and we have to draw the line. And I think if I was making policy, and I will never ever get involved in policy or government or in any country. I can't in Malaysia, but I wouldn't do it in the UK either. But, you know, if I was, not that I would, where I would draw the line is, you know, let's use, my opinion, let's use embryo genome editing for really, really, the top really serious life-threatening conditions, which are caused by single gene mutations or single mutations within known genes. That's easy. That's definable. It's measurable. It's something that you can focus on and show that it actually has clinical benefit, and it helps families.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Dr. Arif Anwar, resident geneticist on Are Genetically Modified Embryos Important on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.